Mrs. Marie Miller is a Flemish Belgian living on the west side, close to where her parents and other immigrants settled. She talks here of life in this community when she was young. Mrs. Miller was born in 1901. The interview took place on December 9, 1975, and the interviewer is Linda Green.
Mrs. Miller, could you tell me something about what it was like when your parents came over?
Well, I was born here in 1901, and my parents came here about 1892, as near as I can figure, because they told me that they came in August, I think. And they were here a couple of months, and they were celebrating the 400th anniversary of the landing of Columbus. So it must have been 1892, and they came with a group of young couples, and all of them, I think, about in their age group, and nearly all of them with a child, as my eldest sister was with my parents. And I think my mother was pregnant at the time also, which a baby she lost when she came here. And so I was the second youngest of seven, so I was born here. And I used to ask them whatever possessed them to come here, because the climate was so much harder than it was where they lived. And my mother said because they knew some people who had come here earlier. I believe her foster brother was here before she was. And my father's eldest brother, I think, was here also. So this bunch of young people came together, and I marveled at their courage, because they had no money. My parents came on borrowed money, and no prospect of a job, no place to live. And she said, when I say she, I'm referring to my mother, of course, that they left nothing either. They had nothing there. So they were really nothing out.
Why did they come to Green Bay then?
Yeah, because they knew some people who had settled here. And my father's first job was working for a commercial fisherman. And they rented a little house out on either McDonald Street or North Broadway, out in the northwest part of town, further northwest than this is. And my father was terrified, because he'd go on to help them lift nets through the ice, which was something he was not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And he was afraid of drowning, so he didn't do that too long. And then most of his life he worked for the Chicago Northwestern Railway as a flagman, a crossing flagman, or as a section hand. And at one time he was a janitor at the Elmore School. Because my parents were not educated. They had some very small education.
How did they learn the language?
Well, my father, I think from us. My father taught himself to read. My grandmother Motif, my father's mother, also taught herself to read. My mother never had time to learn to read. And my father read the newspaper, and so did my grandmother. And they learned from us. My mother was very, very anxious to learn the English language. She thought as long as they were here, that's what they should do. And she had no patience with these Belgians who refused to learn to speak English and who always spoke Flemish. So, although I think that was more common among the French Belgians, some of the French Belgians who were born here in this country couldn't speak English, which my mother thought was a crime. And they were determined to be citizens. My father took out what he called his papers as soon as he possibly could, so that he was a naturalized citizen and could vote, which was a big thing to him. They thought that was such a privilege to be able to pick your president, because there they had a king, of course, a monarchy, King Leopold at the time they came. And he, as soon as we were of age, which was 21 then, we had to go down and register so that we could vote, and believe me, who went to vote whenever there was an election. Yeah. And my mother learned the language and liked to learn all new words, picked up anything that was new, any unfamiliar word that she heard, she would come home and ask us about it, you know. I got one funny thing to tell you. One time, she used to help deliver my sister's children, help the doctor deliver my children, but she wouldn't do it for others. This doctor at that time wanted her to act as a sort of midwife or helper. But my mother said no, she didn't mind with her own, but she didn't want to do it with others. But she did go to one of the neighbors who was having a rather difficult time. And she lived next door to one of my sisters, my sister Rose, who was Mrs. Fred Tallier. And my mother came home and she said, well, sweets have a baby girl. And of course we said, what did they name her? And she said, the funniest thing, she said, something that you kids say when you mean yes. And we, certainly, no, but it's something like that, she said. Well, we thought of everything, anything that we could think of, no. Well, we hightailed over to my sister's. What on earth did Sweets name their baby? She said, Shirley, which my mother interpreted as Shirley.
Right.
Let's see, what else can I tell you? My grandmother Waters, my mother's mother, came here after. I don't know how much later, but I doubt if it was more than 2 or 3 years after. And I believe at that time that my mother's sister and her husband came. He was Fred Papps. And they built, by that time, my parents had built a home on Elmore Street, which was then 1040 Elmore, but is now 960. And my grandfather built a little home next door to the east of them. And then my aunt and her husband built a home east of my grandparents, so that they were between their two daughters. Mm-hmm. And they each had an acre of land, which they gardened. I can't say it was a farm, because an acre is hardly a farm. But they were mostly truck gardeners. And we, as kids, used to go selling these vegetables.
Where did you go?
Well, we had a regular route that we followed. We'd go down, I remember we'd go down Kellogg Street, and I think up Ashland, and way down Ashland to Walnut, probably. And by that time Oregon was always one of our favorite streets. We had a lot of customers on Oregon Street. And by that time we were just about done, you know. And we also raised vegetables for, I know that some of these people, there were other Belgians who lived in our neighborhood who did the same thing, but I'm more familiar with my own family. We raised onions for the pickle company, for pickling onions. And part of this acre would be set aside for that, you know, and then they'd sell it to this, was called Alark McGuire at that time. They were on North Broadway. And in later years, we raised beets for Larson Canning, mm-hmm. because we couldn't possibly sell or eat all the vegetables you could raise on an acre of ground. But we always ate our first vegetables ourselves. We did it at our house, which wasn't a common practice. The first tomatoes were ours, mm-hmm. and one of our favorites meals, and I still love it, is brand new potatoes and fresh green peas boiled together with sour cream. And we always look forward to that. And we, if we were going to have corn for supper, our evening meal, we just go right out and pick it and husk it and then put it right in the kettle, and the corn you buy doesn't taste like that.
See, which other vegetables did you have?
Anything you could name, cabbage, cauliflower, carrots, lettuce, radishes.
Leeks?
Leeks, oh yes, because we always had to make leek soup. And I still make leek soup, but it's kind of hard to find. I don't see the vegetable around very much. It's like a mild onion. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
Yeah. So the neighborhood was mostly Belgian?
All of them. Until about, when I got in high school, we had a mixture of people, but most of them, even on our street, were Belgians.
And then people spoke Flemish with each other?
Right. Only we at home spoke English, except to my grandma Motif. She refused to answer us if we didn't speak Flemish to her. And when we go to visit her, you can see she looks like a disciplinarian, doesn't she? We'd walk in her house, and if we wouldn't say anything, she'd say, when you walk in someone's house, you say, good morning, grandmother, or whatever. And when you leave, you say goodbye. You don't just barge in on someone. And my other grandma, Waters, was more relaxed. We barged in and out of her house continuously, and she made no bones about it. And we could speak either to her. Of course, some of the things in English they didn't understand, so we had to be bilingual.
And she used to wear...
She always wore a little scarf on her head, which we call babushkas now, but they call them a nosduk, which a nosduk would be a handkerchief. Your nose, a nose cloth would be the translation. And she'd get material, usually, her best ones were white with a little black figure in calico, and she'd have enough material to make herself a little scarf for her head, and we never saw her without this scarf, indoors and out. Wherever she went, she wore this little cap on her head. My other grandma, Motif, didn't. She wore fancier things. I remember she had a black one with black lace inserts and black lace edging, or she wore little sort of bonnet hats tied under her chin. She was more dressy than the Grandma Waters. That was my Grandma Waters was my little grandma, and Grandma Motif was my big grandma. And Grandpa Waters was a little man, very cranky. He didn't like us barging in and out of the house all the time, and he'd raise cane when we did, but my grandma would tell him, oh, be quiet. She liked to have us come over.
Did she bake bread?
My Grandma Motif did. I suppose Grandma Waters did too, but I don't remember that. She wasn't what I'd call the greatest baker. And my Grandma Motif, every time she'd start a new loaf of bread, would make the sign of the cross on it with her knife. Before she'd cut into it, she'd... Maybe that was a custom there, I don't know. But Grandma Waters was the one who made the cheese balls.
Do you want to describe those?
Well, they were made with cottage cheese, and I think they drained them quite dry. And then she'd make them in little balls, about like a snowball, smaller than a baseball. And she had a little lean-to shed attached to her house, and there was a shelf set up high right by the door as you came in. And on this shelf there were always probably a dozen cheese balls maturing. And they'd get moldy. They were just covered with blue fuzz. And then she'd know just when they were right to eat. She'd take them down and wash them, and they had a hard coating on. And then she'd scrape the inside out of it and use it for a bread spread.
And when would you eat that? Special occasions?
Eat it. No. No, that was almost a staple in her diet. And another thing she used to have, of course, they had these wood-burning stoves, you know, we had to cook on. My grandfather, Waters, used to go to the north yards, the northwestern yards back here, and he'd sweep out the grain cars. There were always leftover little piles of wheat or whatever grain that they shipped, you know, and he'd sweep that up and bring it home for his pigs. And my grandmother had a black kettle, a three-legged kettle on her stove always. And it had this wheat. She was always cooking wheat for her pigs. I saw her cooking more for her pigs than for themselves. And another thing she'd have in there was potato peelings. Other garbage. I don't think they had much of anything. But and it really smelled good. I can even remember the smell. I can sort of remember what it smelled like when you walk in her house. She was always cooking this wheat or grain, whatever grain it was, for her pigs. And we always raised pigs. In spring, my father would go to a farmer's market down on Main Street. He'd have a bag, a burlap bag, and he'd come home with the burlap bag over his shoulders with two little squealing pigs in it every spring. And he'd have a coop all built for them already. And they were really cute. They were teeny and pink with little curly tails, you know. And in fall, then they'd butcher when the weather was cold enough so that the meat would keep.
Did you eat anything special on holidays?
No, never. In fact, my mother hated holidays. They upset her routine in life, I think. And another thing, as far as Christmas was concerned, we didn't have anything, and I think it upset her to think that she didn't have anything special for the holidays, you know. Until we got older and were working, of course, mm-hmm. Then we had it. And turkey we tried once, I remember, for Thanksgiving, because we insisted, and we had learned at school that that was the American thing to eat. And she said, I know you kids won't like it, because turkey in those days was not like the turkey we have now. It was a very stringy, dry bird. So finally she got one, and we didn't like it. She was right. But we ate an awful lot of chicken, because my father raised his own chickens. Also, a big thing among these Belgians, I don't know whether that was a hobby in Belgium or not, I didn't tell you that the last time you were here, was pigeon racing.
Oh.
And, I had a picture. What did I do with that? A picture of my grandmother's home. And it shows in the back they had a barn with a pigeon roost. I'll have to look and see where the dickens that picture is. My uncle, I mean, he lived with my grandma, and he flew pigeons, and my father did for a while. And it still is quite a practice among some of the Belgians.
What does it mean to fly pigeons?
Well, they take them and they have homing pigeons, of course, and they put them in a box and they ship them somewhere, and then they have somebody time. They have timers. I don't know just how they trust one another or who watches this, but then whoever's pigeon comes home first is the winner.
Oh.
And my father did it for a little while, but then I remember that he killed off the flock. I guess it was a little too much.
You told me a story before about your grandparents arriving in Green Bay.
Oh, yeah. Of course, they had never seen a black person, and they had heard about America having wild Indians, and I don't know what they expected to see, but my Uncle Charlie, who was my mother's foster brother, had a tavern on Broadway not too far from the Northwestern Depot, and he told one of the porters, a black man, to watch for my grandma and grandpa when they came. And this man came up to them and wanted to help them with their luggage. They were afraid of him. And they thought he was going to take this away from them. And they put up quite a battle, and he had to go and get my Uncle Charlie to convince him that everything was well. Although that wasn't too far-fetched. I didn't tell you this either. When my mother and father got to Chicago, my mother told me, she had to go to the restroom. And she went in the restroom there in the depot and left my father out standing outside the door with my sister Louise on his arm. She was a year and a half old. And a man came in the room in this room, and he took her by the arm. And of course, he talked to her, but she didn't understand a word he said. And she said he was trying to drag her along with him. And they came out the door, and there's my father, who was a big man. And when he saw what was going on and stepped up to this man, he quickly dropped her arm and ran. But evidently, it wasn't unheard of. My mother thought he was probably what they called a white slaver in those days, you know. And so my parents, my grandparents probably weren't too far out when they thought somebody was trying
to. It could happen.
Right. Every time any of my father's relatives or my mother's or their friends would come here after I was old enough to be aware of it, it seemed as though everybody and his brother stopped at our house and would be there until they could get located.
Oh.
And one of my father's brothers, this is a little off color, came here with what my mother thought was his wife. And they stayed at our home, and they weren't married, which she didn't know and which they didn't tell her. And they were living together. And one of my mother's friends came over, and she said, "Virginia, do you know that those two people aren't married?" And my mother said, "Of course I don't." She said, "Here I have a house full of little kids." She said, "Would I put up with that?" She said, "Just wait till he comes home from work." And he came home from work, and she said, "You get into your good clothes, you and your wife, and we're going down to see Father Van Cistern." And she got them down to St. Willibrod's Church and had them married. So that went on even in those days. And then my Uncle Fred and his family came, and by that time I was in sixth grade, and they had a daughter who was just 2 months younger than me. And I couldn't wait to see her, because of course we could hold a conversation with her. And we were just stunned when we saw them, because they looked so foreign, you know. And she had a shawl rather than a coat. I don't know what time of year this was that they came, but I hurried home from school to see them. And the first thing we said, "Come on out and play." And she grabbed her shawl. And I said, "Put your coat on. I couldn't see how you could play with a shawl on, you know." And she also had pierced ears, and which wasn't, my mother had pierced ears, but none of us did. And to see a kid about, let's see how old, I was about 10 then, with pierced ears, and the other kids' clothes looked so unfamiliar to us too, you know. And then my Grandma Motif and my Uncle Adolf and my Uncle Victor and his wife and daughter Rose came together, and that must have been in about 1906, I would say, around 1906 or 1907. And they were at our house. My Grandma and Uncle Adolf stayed with us for some time. And I talked with my Uncle Adolf not too long ago. He's the only one that's left. And my cousin Rose is Uncle Victor's daughter, the one that came with them. And we were talking with him, and she said, "You were 13 years old when you came here, Uncle Adolf." And he said, "Yes." And she said, "Where did you go to school?" He said, "Go to school." He said, "I had to go to work to support my mother." And she said, "Well, how could you work when you couldn't read or write or understand English?" And he said, "Marie taught me." And I said, "I taught you. I must have been 5 years old if you were 13. And he said, "Yes, you were." But he said, "You could read and write." And he said, all of, you know, those kids who were still in school would come home from school with their books. And he said, "I would just bedevil them to show me how to read and write." And he said, "You kids taught me how to read and write." And then he got a job, his first job as a... he worked for a grocer. In those days, they'd hire young men who went around taking grocery orders, and then they'd put them up and then deliver them in the afternoon. So he must have been able to do some writing.
Yeah.
So. And who, let's which my Uncle Alec, I can't remember when he came or how he came. He was married here. He must have come over as a young man. But who he came with, I can't say, because I don't remember. Let's see, then my father's oldest brother, Frank, I never knew. He must have been dead before I was old enough to remember. And then my dad was next. And Uncle Fred, I told you he came. Uncle Joe was the one who came with a girlfriend. And Uncle Vic came with my grandma, Motif, and Uncle Adolf came with him. But Uncle Alec, I can't say. And I talked to Cousin Rose about this, and I asked her about her father, where he went into the plastering business when he came here. And she said that he was apprenticed in Belgium to a mason, and that he learned the business there. And she said every weekend he'd come home, and then he'd go to this, wherever he was in training. It must have been one of the larger cities, and he'd have to walk there. And my grandma would pack him a couple of loaves of bread and some cheese and things, because he had to furnish his own food. And he'd go there for the week and then come home again on the weekends.
Oh, for a whole week?
Yeah, he'd be gone for a week as a young boy, you know. And he came here and he started himself in the plastering business, and he did very well. She said he learned all that there.
Did the neighborhood ever get together for social gatherings?
No, because, the people who came over with my parents, they used to get together for, and of course the Belgian weddings were a big thing.
Oh, what were they like?
Well, I can remember those at my house, my two eldest sisters. You'd be preparing for days before these weddings, and they'd be baking pies, and we had, I can remember we had a cupboard in our, which was a cellar then, and we had a cupboard full of pies that were baked several days ahead. We had hired a woman to come and help with some of the cooking. And mostly they had chicken to eat, because you raised your own chickens, but you'd have to buy a lot of them also.
How did you cook the chicken?
I don't know. In the oven, I'm pretty sure. Not stuffed. I think they were cut up and stuck in the oven on big pans, if I remember correctly.
And were the pies the Belgian pie that we see?
Not necessarily all the Belgian pies. You know, the kind made with cottage cheese and prunes. Well, those also, but every kind. Apple and... Oh, and you name it. And then they'd buy a bunch of bananas, a whole stalk, and that would hang in the basement. This is just the week before the wedding, probably, that this was all going on. And cakes they'd bake, although they'd have the wedding cake itself baked somewhere. And then the day of the wedding, after the church ceremony and everything, the bridal party would eat first, and usually the mothers were busy helping cook and everything. It wasn't like now that they'd sit down with the... They were busy organizing and getting things going. And they'd always have... The bride would have her friends as waitresses. That was sort of, you know, they couldn't ask them all as bridesmaids, so they'd ask them to be waitresses, and that was a big thing. They'd have a corsage to wear, or a little carnation, you know, to pin on. And after that, after they ate, then the older people would eat. These tables were, they'd have two, three tables set together, and you know how they'd have like a dining room and a living room together, almost with just a great big arch. Well, they'd extend all the way. They'd be tremendous. And they had fruit, oranges, and bananas, and whatnot, and all this other mashed potatoes and gravy, and heaven help us, I don't know what all. And after all the adults got through eating, then the kids were allowed to eat, and we could all come and eat. And usually they'd build a platform in the backyard. We didn't, because we had what we called a summer kitchen, a big unfinished room at the end of our house. And It even had a rough floor, but I can remember they'd mop the floor and wax it before the wedding, and then they'd have a little somebody fiddling or playing an accordion. Yeah, and everybody would dance. Oh. Yeah. Oh, it was really something. And of course, the beer flowed freely.
Did you make the beer yourself?
Oh, no, no, no.
Were there any other times that you had music as a group?
Oh, yes, when they'd have these little get-togethers, this group that came over together. I don't know how many couples came with my parents, but they'd get together and they'd dance, because I can remember one of the couples used to really cut it.
What kind of dancing did they do?
Oh, sort of a polka and what my mother called a Scottish, and I don't know what. We used to think it was great, and wherever they went, the kids went also. And my cousin Rose says, too, she can remember going to these things and falling asleep on beds loaded with clothes. They'd throw the kids and the clothes and everything on the beds, you know. Everybody'd come in and they'd have a sleepy child. Or you'd sit there a while and the kids would begin to nod. They'd say, well, we better put them down. They'd put them in a bed and there'd be everybody's coats and, you know.
Did you celebrate Kermesses?
No. Mm-mm. Although, they did in Belgium, because my birthday is the 8th of September, which is a Catholic holy day. It is there. We don't celebrate it as that. It is the birthday of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. And she said at Louvain, which was near their home, which was the city near their little village, that was the day that they had a Kermes, and she said that she always remembered my birthday because it was on the day of the Louvain Kermes. Oh. So what those Kermeses were there, she never said. But the French Belgians celebrate them more than we did. Hmm. I met a lady the other day. I went to a luncheon Saturday, and she was an old neighbor. She lived about way down Elmore Street, and she was somewhat older than I, and she said she always remembered my parents. I told you what good parents I had. She said, in those days when we were kids, this Elmore Street was, well, just a dirt road and rutted, and on both sides we had